When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We're your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. Today, we're recapping and discussing episode 6 of the Percy Jackson Disney Plus show. Now, I know, Erin, you were extremely disappointed that this was not a musical.
So disappointed. Really, I actually was thinking before we started recording, I was like, I think that my goal for this episode, in honor of Lin-Manuel Miranda, is to make as many Hamilton references as I can and be like as insufferable as possible. I think that's my goal. Will I remember it? Will I forget about it by the time we start talking about this? Maybe. But what I'm striving for.
I support you in your endeavors.
Thank you.
Well, I liked the changes that they did. I thought they did them very well, and it's nice to have. I loved, you know, Percy having zero brain cells and the three of them just sharing the one brain cell. But this is also really nice. All of them bring like a bit of studying, and also
they did their research.
Also, it is more plausible that these nerds who have been thrown into a world of Greek mythology are going to have done a little bit of research. And Sally would have done a bit to prepare Percy for these adventures.
Yeah, Sally prepared her boy. Also, these episodes, so this is fun because we once again got to see these ones in advance. The last one was just like a fun little blip. We'd like to thank our mob for that, and Robert for your, you know.
Mostly Robert, yeah.
Mostly Robert's meme for, you know, I'm saying I don't believe in manifesting anymore. Maybe in this new year of 2024, it's about just like demanding what you want, asking politely, really. I'm not quite leveled up to the demanding portion yet, but, you know.
Well, I also liked, I know for some reason people held on to, it didn't leave that much of an impact on me, the poker face scene in the movie, but it is nice to have
the poker face scene.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of like these kids who care about the quest and have a sense of urgency instead of the movie where they're just kind of bopping around and clearly does not care about the source material. I know that there's like a random connection and now everyone is like suddenly very passionate about the scene as if it wasn't the worst thing you've ever seen when you were watching it, being like, Rick is rolling in his grave. He's alive, but he's rolling in his grave.
Yeah, he's very alive, but you know what? Honestly, I'm going to say it. I feel like nobody says it. That scene wasn't good. I don't know why the fandom is obsessed with it. Like, it was funny, but it wasn't good. Grover was, like, actively, like, trying to pick up hookers in it, in the movie. Like, what was going on? And, like, they were basically all high. It was very weird.
It was very strange. I'm really glad that they did not make these 12-year-olds go through that, because that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it when we get to it, but it felt like they kind of had a little bit of a dig at the movie, because in the movie it was all about like eating the lotus flower, and they were like eating these weird flowers off of platters, and then in the show they're like, no, it's not about eating the flower, it's like about being in this environment and breathing it in.
Yeah.
So, take that. Who did that? Chris Columbus, I think, did that.
Yeah, which is hilarious, because we love
hilarious.
Him.
Yeah. I actually don't know anything about him personally. He might be problematic. I don't know. But he's done some great work.
Yeah, exactly. This is like a blip in his, just not discography, filmography.
Yeah. Anyway. His resume.
So this episode covers chapter 16 and 17, which is our episode 7. Well, what's crazy is I didn't realize that them taking the truck over and also going into the hotel is all one chapter.
Yeah, in the book, they really jam-pack the events. And even the Lotus Hotel is like a couple of pages in a chapter, that whole scene. And of course, there's so much there to expand. They expanded it into the most memorable part of the movie. And now they're expanding into an entire episode and also inserting Hermes.
Yeah, which I'm glad. It makes a lot of sense. Again, we'll talk about it when we get to it. We always get a little ahead of ourselves because we don't get to discuss this until we're doing this podcast. So we have a lot to say to each other. But So the episode summary is Percy, Annabeth, and Grover must resist the alluring draw of a casino that feels outside of time. Mm-hmm. I do like that they're not making me run out of breath anymore with their long-ass sentences, but it is funny how short these descriptions are getting.
Yeah, they're really they're done trying to hook people at this point. They're we're trying to give away as little as possible.
All right, so this opens with a Percy nightmare, which we knew was very popular in the books. He had them constantly, and I'm really glad that they're inserting that a little bit here. So it seems like a headmaster of a school is talking to somebody that Percy can't see. He's sitting outside watching this headmaster discuss replacing the lightning thief and having future plans. Like Zeus and Poseidon's war is just the beginning. And Percy's trying to get a glimpse of whoever that this guy is talking to, which is fun because he's not being haunted. In the last couple of dreams he's had, he's the one being haunted. Now he's doing the haunting, technically.
Yeah. Which is something we see throughout the books, throughout all of Rick's books, being able to sometimes ending up in other people's dreams. And Rick loves a dream. I'm glad they're bringing that into this. It's fun to see some of the dreams also come to life. But I thought this was an interesting choice to have it be the headmaster speaking with what we know is Kronos's voice and someone familiar to Percy, but also an authority figure that, kicked him out of his school. So someone who, not someone in Percy's good books.
The headmaster seems to spot Percy and look at him and kind of include him in the conversation, which obviously freaks Percy out and causes him to wake up. Because basically he's just saying he's our little hero. It's not time for you to be included in this conversation yet, but we'll get there. And then Percy's yeeted out of the dream.
Mm-hmm. And he wakes up in a lovely, smelly animal truck. And so it cuts to Percy, Annabeth, and Grover all in the truck where we left off at the end of the last episode. Grover sees that they're almost there. He's kind of sticking his head out of the top of the truck to see where they're at. And he's also been talking with the animals, gathering intel from them, which I like because we haven't had a lot of the fact that Grover can talk to animals. We're in the book, that was kind of something that was brought up constantly. So I liked getting to see that. And knowing that, he's just chatting up the horses and the zebras and whatever else is in there.
I was interested that Percy didn't talk to the zebra. And when we saw Grover talk to an animal last, he was chatting with the Pegasi, which Percy had no interaction with. So I'm wondering if they're just going to remove the talking to horses thing completely. Or if they're just not ready. It would be kind
of weird. But we need him to talk to Blackjack, that's important.
His Jersey accent.
His Jersey accent. The rest, some of the talking to horses, I'm I don't know that I could take that seriously on screen. I just laugh. The horse would be delivering something super deep and meaningful, and I'd be like, why is the fucking horse talking? So I understand that change. And also, this was so funny to watch because I was watching it, on the couch with my dogs. And when it cut to, the animals and making their noises, both the dogs' heads just went up and were like, huh? Mm-hmm. And they, were looking around for, wherever the ostrich is. But alas, so it's cute. Not in the house. It was on the screen.
Dumb dogs. They didn't realize.
Idiots.
So Annabeth Iris calls Camp Half-Blood and they chat with Luke, who is the one to answer the call. And it's super interesting the way Luke plays it off, because he wants to know a little bit more information on what they're doing. He's surprised, happy that they're alive. And then they kind of drop the bomb that they know who the lightning thief is. And Luke plays it really cool. He's like, who do you think? Like, obviously, they're not going to accuse him via Iris message. Like,
no.
He kind of has an idea they're not on the right track. And they end up accusing Clarice and suggesting that Chiron arrest her. Which, like, this is the evidence that we've presented. Chiron should arrest this child. And
their evidence is also just like Grover thinks that Ares is covering for someone, and obviously it's Clarice. And Luke plays into it too, because they're like, Grover thinks that Ares knows and Ares is covering someone. Who would Ares cover for? And Luke's like, ah, Clarice, like his favorite daughter, which, like, bold, literally an episode ago, Ares was like, I hate children. I hate all of my children. He does not have favorites. He actually loathes all of them.
I also was thinking, do we think that Luke goes and tells Chiron this information? Like, if you were Luke, would you go present this to Chiron so that he could do investigation or go, like, arrest Clarice? Or would you just hold this information to yourself because you know it's wrong? And maybe if an adult brain is involved, Chiron would know that it's wrong. And then they'd start the investigation all over again. And he can just continue to let Percy and Annabeth think that investigations are being, like, happening at camp.
Yeah, I would probably just not tell anyone. Because I think the second Chiron gets involved, like, he put, I mean, he's already involved and he's not doing a great job, but if he learns that, you know, they're all theorizing that Ares is involved in stealing the lightning bolt. I almost said stealing the lightning thief. That would be different. Then Chiron might start sniffing around for whoever was helping, whoever was on that trip that was at the solstice and able to help steal the bolt. And, you know, Clarice wasn't the only one there, as we know.
Percy's about to tell Luke, like, hey, can we have some tips on talking to your dad? We're about to meet Hermes. But Annabeth cuts him off, which we know that was a good... I wonder how Luke would have reacted, being first the lightning thief and also the fact that these guys are going to uncover, like, go talk to his, you know, number one enemy. Annabeth doesn't let Percy talk to Luke about it because she doesn't want to upset Luke. She knows that he's not going to actually give any good advice because he just is very upset and angry and hurt with Hermes. So it was a very interesting, like, turnaround. Percy's shocked that Luke doesn't have a good relationship with Hermes because he's like, Luke is the most put together and amazing man I know. Like, obviously he has a great relationship with his father.
Yeah. Percy, you know, the little Percy crush on Luke, it's there. He's like, this is the coolest guy I've ever met.
He has a great mother, a great father, and he is everything I want to be.
Yeah, right? I also loved, there's a line when Annabeth and Percy are telling Luke about their travels, and they're like, oh, like, this happened on Sunday. And Annabeth's like, actually, that was Monday. And they're, like, bickering, and Luke is like, when did this happen? When did you guys turn into an old married couple? And I loved that line. I was, like, giggling a little bit, and Percy's immediately like, I'm going to change the subject. I'm not going to talk about that.
Oh, the way I was kicking my feet, giggling. Like, I think that did more for me than the boat scene in Waterland.
Same.
It was a mix of everything I wanted, where they were just vibing super well. And the way Luke didn't say, like, oh, you guys like each other. It's like old married couple. He's not implying that they're, like, romantically involved. He's just like, oh, you guys are, like, a unit now. And but they're 12, so saying marriage is, like, so scary. And so they're having a panic attack, and they both portrayed that so well. They're like, oh god, how could you even say that? They just moved on from the conversation.
And that's one of my absolute favorite tropes, when there's two characters that, like, you kind of know are eventually gonna have a thing, and another character, like, calls them out on it or says something. I'm like, you guys act like you're married, or you guys act like a couple. And then I'm like, oh, it makes me so excited. I love that trope. Oh, what is it? The, I don't know, what, mutual pining?
Yes. Mutual yearning.
The yearning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, love it. So Grover releases the animals. He's so funny. And he's like, these are artists. They were only missing one tool. They had everything perfectly aligned. And the tool that they're missing is thumbs. And it's so good.
Yeah. I'd believe that. Like, if animals had thumbs, more animals had thumbs, I think that they'd probably have a better society than us.
Yeah, probably. Or maybe the same society. We've
read it might be before. Really chaotic. Like, my dogs with thumbs, they'd be, like, breaking into the food.
The way they break in.
So much chaos.
You'd close the door to try to pee or something, and Wally's just there. He's like, you thought you could leave me?
I mean, you know, when you've been here before, they hate closed doors.
They do.
Because we don't close doors often. And so if when we have people over and we, like, close the door to go to the bathroom, they just, like bat at the door, like, please let me in. If they had thumbs, they'd be opening that door on everyone. It's like,
I need to watch you pee.
Yeah. You good? You watch me pee. I watch you pee. That's our deal.
But Grover releases the animals into the streets, and mm-hmm. Percy has a moment where, like, this is not going to work, but they don't have time for it, so they end up getting into the Lotus Casino.
Yeah. I love that Percy says, he's like, is this safe? And Grover's like, oh, I gave them, like, the satyr's blessing. They're fine. And Percy's like, no, I mean for the humans.
There's, like, people screaming on the street.
And Grover's like, well, let's get out of here.
He doesn't care about murder.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, but yeah, then they get to the Lotus Casino, and we have, when they enter the casino, it looks so cool. Immediately Levitating is playing, so that's the new poker face, apparently. I thought it was a good choice for a song. It looks like a very classic casino, classic Vegas casino. And we do have some audio clips about the set design and also the costume design. So I'm going to play the one on the set first. Okay, so this is Dan Hanna, who is the set designer, talking about the location that they chose and how they designed that.
And regarding the set, we found a disused mall that was empty, and decided that we could create a casino in that. One of the things that we used to create the illusion of depth was big LED screens, so we could add color and depth with those screens. We sort of split it up into the various areas, so you walked in the main entrance and, you know, off to the right was the more kid orientated stuff, like the virtual reality room and then also, you know, the old slot machines and the game machines. And then into the more sophisticated gambling, which sort of ran down the center and then off to the sort of high rollers. But in each case, we positioned big wall screens of LEDs that we could put imagery on to just keep this feeling alive that you were in a place where it never got dark, the days never changed. And the only time we saw that was in the entrance. When you look back out through the entrance, you could see that it was daylight or darkness outside. But once you're in, you're in. And time goes very quick.
I like how much, like, intention went into creating this space that felt like it existed outside of time. Thought that was really cool, and also love the fact that it's in an abandoned mall. I want to go so in an abandoned cool. mall.
I like, do. That's so I creepy. Don't. Like, I like I the do. Two vibes of it. Like, an abandoned mall in, like, what they use for a set design. It's just like a big empty building, and then an abandoned mall. I think of, like, The Last of Us, that last episode.
Yes.
I'm just like, yes. I don't
want to be
here.
No,
that's what
I was thinking of. No, but that makes me want to. It's not weird. But I think because I played the game and the, like, DLC is that whole, like, episode, whatever that was, 8 or something like that. I don't know. But it's a whole, like, mini game in itself. And it was so fun to explore them all. It honestly wasn't that scary, most of it. Like, the zombies didn't come out till later. But that's what I thought of, too, with the abandoned mall. Very apocalyptic sounding.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what's different from this than the movies and the books is, instead of just, like, falling into it and feeling like they deserve some like downtime, Grover immediately remembers the Odyssey and mm-hmm. how about the lotus flower and how he remembers in the story, when you eat a lotus flower, you forget who you are and what your plan was and you just kind of live in bliss. So they promise each other they're not going to eat anything. Mm-hmm. And you can tell Percy's a bit upset because he's like, oh my God, like I think we deserve to just like chill for a little while, you know, like let's go and play a video game. It's so cool. They end up having to split up. Annabeth and Percy are together because Percy reminds them he has no idea what Hermes looks like. He's like, I won't know who he is if I get left behind.
Like Percy would just be wandering around like, are you a god to everyone?
Which is also really great because we don't find out till later that if they had all three split up, they would have never found each other again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really important that he did stick with someone.
Yeah.
And yeah, I liked the change that they noticed it immediately. You know, when I read the books, I don't really care. But, you know, watching it, sometimes I think to some of the stuff in the books that they didn't notice, like Medusa and like the Lotus Casino, they were pretty dumb. Those kids were not paying attention. And it would make it really hard to believe that, like, I'm like, Annabeth is a child of Athena. How does she not notice this? So I think that's important that they updated that.
Annabeth and Percy are going to look for Hermes, and Grover is looking around too, but he ends up running into a satyr who is like a good family friend of his, who's forgotten everything. His name is Augustus, and he's like has little bits of memory about searching for Pan. And it's like at this moment of Grover's looking at a man who's failed, who inspired his uncle Ferdinand, who we also know now has failed, to search for Pan. So it's just like this nonstop generational curse of not being able to find Pan, and it's making him a little sad, but Augustus ends up like trying to invoke, or like basically says, I know where Pan is, I'm so close, and takes Grover with him. But Grover has this moment where he realizes that Augustus hasn't eaten anything. He hasn't been eating the flowers or anything like that. So he's like, why are you forgetting?
He's just eating like nachos or something. Like because he offers Grover the nachos and Grover's like, no, 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 I won't eat the flowers. And the guy's like, what flowers? These are nachos.
And that's when Grover realizes that he's forgotten everything. And also Grover is like, who am I? Why am I here?
I know.
And Gus is like, oh, you were coming with me so I could show you what Pan. And Grover's like, that must be it. And the two of them end up running off.
Yep. So Grover's like lost already.
Yeah, we've
Grover's
lost long Grover.
Gone. Yeah, we've lost Grover. Grover's lost the plot. So then we get back to Percy and Annabeth, who are looking for Hermes, and they do find him. They eventually find him. There is Lin-Manuel Miranda in like sweats also, which is really funny. And they invoke Luke to try to get his help. He's immediately like, oh, hi, demigods. Like, everyone comes here and everyone asks me for the secret passage to the underworld and I don't give it to them. And they're like, we're friends of Luke. Well, Annabeth says that. And his demeanor changes immediately. It's like, this is my son. See, reference number one. And I'm not going to sing it, not going to rap it. And he immediately changes when Luke is mentioned, and then takes them to a different room.
We did mention
a room where it happened.
God. Didn't see that one. Going, unfortunately.
Thanks. I didn't either. It just came out of me, you know.
This is the first appearance of Wise Girl. Stevie Brain has become a constant, which I love. And he's like, oh, Wise Girl, like, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go?
Yeah, I love that Seaweed Brain, like the first time she called him Seaweed Brain it was a really fast moment in the last episode. Like you said, you didn't even notice it. It was very much, she was just frustrated with them and reactive. And now it's just like her nickname for him. Just calls him that. It's so cute.
Very cute. Ugh. So sitting with Hermes is like talking about existing between time and space. That's how he's the delivery god and his whole spiel, which is probably why he likes the casino, because he gets to be in a place that is equal to him, where he and this hotel both exist in this like vacuum. And then he starts launching into his own woe is me monologue. He's like, I can't interfere. You don't know how much it hurts. I'm trying to help Luke. but it just hurts us more.
Hermes brings up specifically, like, the reason he doesn't interfere anymore is because the last time he did was with Luke and his mom, and what happened to Luke's mom. And, you know, Annabeth was there. She's like, I remember that. I remember what Luke said to you and how he blamed you for everything that happened. And Hermes is now like, I don't get involved anymore. Like, I'm done. He's removing himself from the narrative.
And so then he... I remember said I know I said I would support you in this endeavor, but I decided to go against it. This is annoying.
That's actually kind of mean. That's so mean.
Hermes is like, you know what it feels like when you like love someone a lot, but you guys can't stop hurting each other. Like, and he touches Percy and invokes this memory. And for a second, we see baby Percy sitting in a car, and then it comes back. It obviously is a significant moment for Percy. We have no idea what it's about. We don't know if it's about. It's probably about Sally, because at the end of the day, everything is Sally.
Yeah.
He goes to touch Annabeth. He's like, I'm going to remind you too. And Annabeth is like, no, thank you. I can remember without having to relive the trauma of itself.
Yeah, she's fast. She reacts. She's immediately like, nope, not going there with you.
Hermes is like, I can't help you. I can't stand this pattern. I keep sending people to the underworld and it ends badly every single time. Like, no one is successful. I might as well not even try. Which Annabeth is like, well, screw you. If you're not going to help us, I'm just going to walk away. So she gets up and Percy is really annoyed and is about to leave too. And Hermes is like, I'm just going to... I saw something that was like, every single one of these monsters that these children have met just goes straight for the mommy and daddy issues. They don't allow these kids to breathe. They're like, well, your mom hates you and your dad is never there for you.
Yeah.
And it's so mean. Like, why can't they bully them in a normal way?
Why can't they just be like, you're ugly?
Yeah.
Your shoes are ugly. Like, why do they have to be like, your mother never loved you? Jeez.
Hermes basically uses that and he hurts Percy further by saying, hey, like, Poseidon's the one who gave me this advice. He told us that, like, we shouldn't interfere, that parenting is about, like, staying away and you should stay away. And Percy is like a new daddy's boy. You can see Walker does such a good job of, like, being hurt by this because he was just being a champion of his father. He's new to this whole thing and he's just introduced to being like, I love daddy. And he's a little hurt that his father would say this. And he's like, then why would Poseidon say that he's going to see me in Santa Monica? And Hermes is like, gods don't like being powerless and not being involved. So sometimes we break our own rules. And then Hermes gives them the bad news that it's not much use anyway because they've been here for a long time and time has passed. And Percy realizes it and runs to Annabeth and they run to the front door and they see that it's nighttime. It's actually already Thursday, which is the evening of the day of the solstice.
Yep. And this is when you said you didn't notice it, but this is when I noticed that it kind of has like a wider shot. And you get to see like a lot of people walking around. And this is when I noticed the different costumes and how there's people in like 20s outfits and more modern outfits. And I'm going to play now. We have a clip from Tish Monahan talking about the design of these costumes specifically.
For myself, I created boards from every decade that we were going to be dealing with. I found just a huge variety of imagery from people going to Las Vegas back in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. I got our producers and director to highlight the images that they thought were their favorites. I also had to think of the fact that you can only see in a quick glimpse what decade this is. So I just thought it was really important that whoever was from a certain decade would travel together in clumps so that they could be recognizable. If you have everyone all, you know, mixed in, and, you know, it wasn't going to be as easily a visual reference. So that's what we did. And we just ordered our, you know, rental costumes, and thank goodness there were, you know, lots of them available.
So yeah, I definitely clocked that on watching. And I was also paying super close attention to the things in the background, maybe even more so because I was desperately like, where's Nico? Where's Bianca? I didn't catch anything. So if anyone did, I'm sure we'll see, like, if there's any little Easter eggs about them. But I was looking. I didn't see anything on, like, any games of with their names or anything like that. But, you know, I've been known to not notice things, so.
I am even more known to not notice things. So I'm sure someone will tell us when we see, like, thousands of TikToks of this episode.
Someone's exactly.
Gonna tell us. Yeah. Someone better than us will tell us.
It's all part of the analysis, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, everyone's mad that Hermes has allowed them to waste this much time. So Annabeth's like, you know what? That's good, because I picked his pocket when I turned invisible when he was talking about how your father doesn't love you.
She's like, I heard all that. Whatever.
Yeah.
I gasped when she took out the keys. I was like, that is, like, that's my girl. That's Anna. Yeah. I love her. We love to see it.
Because it
She's
was
so sassy and great.
It wasn't very like her to just walk away and just be like, mm-hmm. well, if you're not going to help us, then I guess this quest is over. Like, obviously she's going to have a plan B, and it's going to be robbery. So why not?
Yeah. She doesn't just have plan B. She has, like, plans B through F going on. Like, she's like, I'm going to rob him. That doesn't work. I'm going to drop kick him. Like, I don't, she's got options.
As they're about to leave, they're like, we forgot something. What did we forget? And then they see Augustus coming down the escalator, and Annabeth remembers Grover. Percy's like, Grover's gotten so old. And
she's like, Percy's like, wow, how much brain time has empty. Passed?
Yeah.
I love that.
And so they're like, oh shit, we have to go get Grover.
Like, fully about to leave without him. Amazing.
They find Grover playing a VR game of finding Pan. So they're like, this place has everything. Like, it has, they know that satyrs are going to love this. So they're like, here's a game you can play. And at this point, when they kind of wake him out of the game, he's a sweet, clueless baby. He has no idea who they are. He has no idea who he is. He's just like, oh, okay, I'll come with you. If you guys say that you're my best friends, I'll go wherever you say. Let's go on a quest.
Yeah. He's very sweet, very innocent in this scene. I do love, too, when he gets pulled out of the VR game. He's like, I was so close. And Percy's like, I hate it when that happens, because I feel like it's very much like kids who play video games that generate, like, if you, like, turn off their game right as they're about to win, that's very much a
big no-no.
Yeah. And I feel like Percy would be a video game kid.
Oh, 100%.
Percy definitely played Fortnite, unfortunately.
Oh, I mean, that's why he's doing the dance.
He did the Fortnite dance, yeah.
So they end up underground looking for whatever vehicle Hermes might travel in. They have no idea what kind of car he's going to have. And as they walk, they talk, and Grover's a little confused and a little sad. He's like, am I the reason we're late for this quest? And Percy's like, no, it's not your fault. Like, I'm glad that we are together now, and no matter what, we'll get through it. Kind of reflecting Grover's words back to him. Like, we're never going to be alone. We're going to be together. So they find a taxi, which they're like, oh, that makes sense for, you know, the god who can exist between space and time, and the god of travelers is probably going to be driving a taxi. And of course, Hermes is also the god of thieves, so he knows that Annabeth picked his pocket, and he probably watched her do it, and he's left instructions for them in a map, because he's kind of impressed that they've gotten this far.
I love that the letter said, like, on the envelope, it was like, to the dumb kids. So funny.
So they're like, okay, the taxi's going to take us wherever we want to go. We just have to get it out of the garage. And obviously these are two 12-year-olds and a satyr who is high technically at the time. So
he's basically high. Yeah.
Yeah. Percy's like, all right, I gotta drive. And I enjoyed this scene way too much. It was just so, I was, like, literally gasping. I think I had more reactions than I did in the first episode watch where we were on camera. I was thinking about it afterwards. I was, like, violently, like, hiding my face and yelping every time Percy hit a wall or slammed into something.
This is, like, my new favorite scene. This was so good. Like, I was loving this episode, and then this scene came, and I was like, this might be my new favorite episode. This is just so, like, quintessential Percy and Annabeth and Grover. Like, the three of them in this chaotic situation. They've been doing all these things, like, fighting monsters, and they're like, the biggest challenge so far is getting a car out of a parking garage, which, like, mood, those turns are really tight.
That's scary.
I did that today, because I watched this episode yesterday and I had to park in the parking garage at work, which normally I opt for the outdoor parking because I don't like the parking garage because it has really tight turns. And I was like going down the tight turn and I was thinking of Percy. I was like, I feel you, man. Like, that's a challenge for the first time you get behind the wheel. It's a challenge.
It's such a challenge. As a grown adult, I got a car and I live in a city and my car lives in a really tight parking spot. And like within the first 2 weeks of having this car, I hit every single angle of it on a pole of some kind. So
amazing.
And I'm an adult. Percy's 12. His feet can barely reach the pedals. So
his feet can probably... He's probably taller than you.
That's fair. That's actually a good point. We don't have to talk about it. He's like, how do we make it go backwards? And I was like, oh God, this is going to be horrible. It was so many shenanigans. I loved it.
I'm looking up his height right now. Stop. Oh my God, he's 5'7"?
Now, how tall was he when they were filming this? Like,
he was probably still taller than us, let's be honest.
No wonder, like, Leia looks so short next to him. She looks so tiny.
She looks so tiny. He was probably, what, like 5'3" or something? Because he's grown so much when he filmed this. Oh my gosh, that is embarrassing for us.
For you, I'm 6 foot something.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway. I thought you were like 12 feet or something like that. True. I thought that was the established canon. It's a moving target, actually.
There were some parts of this that just really got me. The way that he honked way after the fact. It's so me. I mean, Washington, you don't honk very much in general. And then I always feel like, hey, that was mean. And I'll honk and the guy's already like, you know, 1,000 feet away.
Yeah. And I love that, like, that he looks so indignant that this person didn't slow down. He looks like, he's like aghast that they didn't slow down in the parking garage for him. Like, oh my gosh. So funny.
They make it and they're doing a pretty good job getting out of the garage. And then another favorite scene is Percy's gazing lovingly at Annabeth. Oh. She's lovingly gazing at him and he swipes the side of the car so badly.
Died. The fact that he's struggling to get out of the exit turn and he makes it through the turn. And then he looks like him and Annabeth make eye contact and they're like kind of celebrate. And you can't, they're like, yeah, we did it. And then he immediately hits the wall. Like, my boy is falling in love already. Like, he is not able to pay attention when he looks at her.
Then they almost get hit by a truck. And the only thing that's safe, because they're not looking each way, they're just gunning it out of this parking garage. And the only reason that they actually survive, like, this would have been the end of the series if it wasn't a magical car that takes them straight to the beach in Santa Monica.
Yeah. That scene is just going to live rent-free in my head. Like, I've seen a lot of people talking about how the throne scene will live rent-free in their head in the last episode. This is my scene. This is my Roman Empire. This is what I'm thinking about constantly now, is the way he stared at her and then hit a wall. That's so Percy Jackson. So incredible. Percy. And I love the whole time, too. Sorry, I'm going to talk about it one more time.
Yeah, no.
I love the whole time, too, that Annabeth... Like, there's a part where, like, Percy's struggling. He's like, you want to try it? And she's immediately like, no. Like, they're both just like, we don't... She's like, I don't want to drive. I'm 12.
They end up in Santa Monica. And now Grover, I mean, he rises from the back seat. And he's like, I forgot everything. He's like, why am I the only one who forgot? And Percy is like, I don't know either. But Annabeth answers them. And this is like, ugh. Got me good. She's like, we remembered because we were together. It's easy to forget when you're alone. And I was like, oh, so true. And they're like, we're never going to be alone again. This, like, constant reassurance to each other that the three of them are always going to have each other's backs.
I'm gonna throw up because I just had a realization that, like, we're never gonna be alone. It just, Heroes of Olympus spoiler for anyone who's only listening to this, plug your ears for a second. But that's like the same thing when, like, Percy and Annabeth fall into Tartarus and then he's like, I'm never letting you be alone again. And the reason they make it through Tartarus is because they're together, they're not alone. Oh, I'm having feelings about them today.
I thought you were actually going to throw up. I was like, why? Like, what is happening?
Because of Percibeth.
Yeah, that's so true. I did see, again, I did see a TikTok today that was like a picture of Percy on the throne that was like, oh, like understanding that, like, not like, yeah, obviously 16-year-old Percy's going to fall into Tartarus for Annabeth, but 12-year-old Percy probably would also fall into Tartarus for Annabeth.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's even like in the books too. I know they've expanded a lot of their relationship in this show, but even in the books, like the moment Percy's loyalty is solidified with Annabeth, which is pretty early on, I think he very much would have fallen to Tartarus for her or for Grover or for his mom. Like those are his people.
He would have done it for Luke too in this first book, which is what's so sad.
And Luke he would have.
Yeah.
Oh.
19.
That's going to be a hard one to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Percy ends up going underwater. Grover and Annabeth were like, we'll be here when you're back. Like, no matter what happens with your dad, we'll be here. So it's that theme again. It's going to get us good. Percy goes underwater, but instead of his father, he meets the Nereid that he had seen earlier in St. Louis. She tells him that Poseidon, which I don't know how much I believe this. She said that Poseidon waited as long as he could, but the solstice has passed and Poseidon has to wait, has to go get his army ready because they're about to go for war. And Percy's released from his quest because he's failed it. He wasn't able to deliver. But he's not going to accept that because he's Percy fucking Jackson. He's like, I'm going to see this through. And he monologues a little bit about perseverance and all of that stuff. And he gets the Nereid to help him. She gives him 4 pearls, saying that these pearls will release them all from the underworld. And she says, go save the world, but go save your mom too.
Oh, so good.
So I really liked the changes. I did think adding Hermes was an interesting choice. They've introduced the gods a lot in this because they want, and they're also like a lot softer, I've noticed, than in the books. In the books, they're kind of like not caring. In this one, they allude to the fact that they all kind of care about either demigods or their children or something in the world. Where in the books, they don't give a shit. They're all kind of, they all just don't want to be involved and they are annoyed that Percy is there in any capacity. So showing Hermes having a reaction to hearing Luke's name, kind of not helping them, but then helping them is a very interesting choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do like that they're introducing a lot more of the gods earlier. Simply because I think it's fun to see them, because in the book you only really see, what, Poseidon and Zeus and Ares.
Well, they see all of them at the end in Olympus.
That's true.
But he's not focused. He's focusing on Poseidon, obviously, in that moment.
And so it's really cool that we get to see them earlier. I also thought that Lin-Manuel Miranda was great as Hermes. Like, I loved his take on Hermes. I feel like for some reason, like, hating on him is kind of a meme that I don't fully understand. Like, I don't really understand why people hate on him. I don't know what he did. I just know that he appears in all the Disney things now. But I thought he did great. I really liked it.
I really liked it. And I really liked the subtle, like, he's kind of an asshole, but it's out of experience, and is he the asshole? And obviously we know a lot more information than the characters do, but I think it's, he did a great job. I really liked the casting. After, you know, after the jump scare was passed, I was like, okay, yeah.
The initial, like, what? Hamilton? What are you doing here?
Also, the comparison from the books. In the books, Percy hasn't told them that his plan is to go save his mom. That his friends are in the dark about that. He doesn't tell them why he's going to the pier and going underwater in Santa Monica. He doesn't tell them anything. And he's also not warned about the gifts in this. In this one, he's just told to go, which I thought was interesting. I also loved, like, obviously, if they're reinforcing the fact that the three of them trust each other, this found family is kind of unbreakable at this point. It's perfect that Percy's going to give them all the information immediately rather than keeping any secrets. He has no more secrets from these guys, and he's hoping that that's the same thing for them. That's also for the new viewers who are, like, trying to figure out if, like, Grover or Annabeth or someone else is going to betray Percy. It makes it much more, like, nail-biting, because it's like, Percy completely and truly trusts them, but what if one of them betrays him?
I like the change that they are now in the know about the fact that he's trying to rescue his mom. And not only are they in the know, but they're really supportive of it too. And they are like, yeah, let's get your mom. I think that's really important to show their loyalty to him.
All right, let's move on to our lightning bolt questions. So we have one rewind question, and this was the only one that I felt was super relevant to our this episode. So I was like kind of like forwarding through as fast, you know, as fast as I can, try not to hear anything. But I do have an idea that we talk about. I know what we talk about, probably. I think we go on quite a bit of a tangent.
Oh, I would imagine.
So the question is, what kind of game would you spend hours playing at the Lotus Casino?
I do think it would be like a Sims type of game. I've lost a lot of hours of my life to The Sims over the years. Especially if it was, you know what I want? I'm gonna sound so old. I want a Sims game that's like on some kind of ergonomic screen. Because the reason I don't play The Sims much anymore is because I also work at a computer and I'm like, I'm not doing that to my neck. I do not need to be staring at a screen longer than I already am, even though I just go and stare at my small screen. But if there was like a magical Sims game that also caused me no pain, no eye strain, I'd be there all day.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I didn't play video games while I was in grad school, because my entire thing was, which is funny because all of my classmates are really into gaming. So I was very surprised that they loved computer games and Xbox. And I was like, we just sit at our computer all day. Like, why do you want to go home and do more hours of this? Anyway, I love The Sims too. I love like anything that has to do with like design. Like I've really been into Cityscape. That's what it is. Something like that. I don't remember. It was on sale. I get to design cities and make sure they have water and stuff. I played, like, for me, it's a lot. I played a couple hours of it. And so I like designing. I want to, like, build my own little world. That's why I liked Age of Mythology and Age of Empire growing up. So
it's giving Annabeth.
It is. I'm just an architect. Yeah. I should have. My father has a master's degree in civil engineering, and I should have followed his footsteps.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm going to play what we said last time. I'm sure we talked about The Sims or, you know.
And what kind of game would you spend hours playing at the Lotus Casino?
100% I would be going down that water slide and doing the bungee jumping. That sounds like so much fun.
I'm not going to lie. Every time I always forget that that's even there. I'm always in my head. It's just all video games. And then I'm like, oh, there's also water slides? What? This place is wild. I would be playing Stardew Valley.
You do that anyway.
Yes. It would be like I'd like a mix of Stardew Valley and The Sims. So Stardew Valley, but you can customize even more. But it's like a nice relaxing, I can build my farm, woo all the townsfolk, become a millionaire, build bigger farm buildings. That's all I want.
To virtually farm.
Yes. Virtually farm. Virtually create a little family.
Are you sure you're not the child of, oh shit, what's her name?
Demeter. The farm. Who knows? But it's only virtually.
Only virtually. Only
virtually farming. The real farming, I would not do well. Also, I don't think my farm's even that good on Stardew Valley, because it's like, whenever I see other people's who are actual gamers, my gaming, the only games I play are The Sims, Stardew Valley, and Animal Crossing. All of those have the same kind of vibe of just building your own stuff and then being nice to townspeople. Well, The Sims has much more of a dark vibe if you want, but my farm's not even that nice. It's not that big, and I'm not that good at making it, like, pretty. I make it work. I make money. That's what matters.
So you like the capitalistic side of Stardew
Valley? No, actually, in Stardew Valley, I left the city because my job at JojaCore was running me, driving me crazy. So really, I'm trying to live the communist life. I'm giving out eggs to all my friends.
Okay, so what's the next question? I don't have time to dissect that.
I'd like to know, why do you just let me talk?
What do you mean? That's our whole friendship.
Our friendship is you posing a ridiculous question and me giving a absurd answer, and you just don't stop me.
The longer it goes on, the wilder it usually gets. I don't think I had joined Stardew Valley at this point.
You hadn't. I think I was trying to sell it to you.
Yeah, you really were. This was like pandemic. We were pretty shut down at this point. So I think I was like, fine, I'll farm, I guess.
Yeah, I do love that I have developed. I have played more games than those three since then. I finally started playing PlayStation games, so I'm a big girl now.
All right, I totally forgot. Well, we didn't see any water slides or any games outside of video games. So I was thinking more of like what, based off of the episode, but I did, if there were water slides and basketball hoops and stuff, I think I definitely would want to do that more than play an architecture game.
Yeah, I believe that.
All right, so my question, next question is, based on your godly parent, what kind of car or vehicle do you think they're going to drive?
Oh, God.
Or you would drive, I guess.
So, like, what would Athena drive?
Mm-hmm.
She's wisdom. What car is wise? A car with a monocle?
A mustache and monocle.
It's like, you know, people put like lashes on their car. That's what it has. But she's also like war.
So I would think that she would drive something that's like self-driving because you have so much work you need to be doing and could be reading.
Does she have like a freaking Tesla?
She 100% has a Tesla. She also likes war, so it makes sense.
Yeah, she would. She's like, sure, Elon Musk. I don't care about giving him money. That, yeah, she would probably drive a Tesla, wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm. See, mm-hmm. Persephone would drive like a donkey and cart, so I don't think it's like, just like with hay in the background and there's flowers everywhere. Like there's no breeze. Like she's not trying to get anywhere fast. Spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but then if it's not, what about her winter self, like when she's in the underworld?
Winter self is just something that's on fire. Just like something dark and evil. Maybe a also a Tesla.
Like a Hot Wheels. Like it would look like a Hot Wheels with the fire on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are her two moods, which is very like me. Donkey and cart or a Hot Wheel.
Yeah. Girlhood is a spectrum.
Yes, it exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, my question is, what kind of zoo animal would you want to share a ride with, like a long ride across the country?
So first of all, none, because they're all kind of stinky.
Yes.
But maybe something that wouldn't, like, I could pet, like, give me some serotonin while I'm having to sit next to them. Hopefully something smaller that's not too stinky and also won't attack me.
Yeah, I agree. I think something I could pet. I'm trying to think of, like, what's at the local zoos. Like, red pandas are a big hit, I remember, at the zoo in Seattle. So, and they don't look like they'd hurt me. So I think that would be a fun little buddy. An otter! Mm-hmm. When it could have, like, a little pool and it would splash each other.
Yeah, it'd be very cute. And they like to cuddle. That's all I want. So.
They like to cuddle, so it would be, you know, it would work out great.
All right, so that's that. I'm so excited to see what's coming next, episode 7. We now have a better idea of our schedule. We'll be releasing more on time when the episodes drop because thanks to you guys, we get a bit of extra time to record.
Woo, woo, woo. And don't forget, you can join our Patreon to read some of our old outlines from our first season of the series, of the Percy Jackson series of our podcast. It is only $3 a month to join.
A link to send an audio message is going to be in our episode description, so please feel free to do that.
Yeah, and don't forget to follow us on social media at Camp Half Pod, and our email is camphalfpod@gmail.com.
please, if you haven't already, I think you should eventually take this out, because if you haven't, you're not going to, but rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast.
Or if you haven't, you're not going to, and honestly, rude.
Rude. I'm going to say understandable, but also
rude. No, rude. You're not a real member of our mob if you don't rate us and review.
But only positively, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, mobs wouldn't be mean to us.
No, only to others.
Only to others, yeah, exactly.
Bye-bye.